And welcome back to Coast. This hour, we'll take your phone calls with Phil Hall as we talk about the weirdest movie ever made and some of his other works, including the greatest bad movies of all time. So get ready to make the calls in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. George Norrie back with you with Phil Hall, the weirdest movie ever made. What do you think this movie did for the knowledge of Bigfoot, Phil?
Well, it certainly brought it to wider attention. Prior to the Patterson-Gimlin film, not many people knew about the Sasquatch. Those who did were primarily students of Native American folklore or, of course, the tribes themselves, because stories of creatures that resemble the Sasquatch are found through tribal folklore throughout North America. It's not just unique to the Pacific Coast. And it also brought a wider consideration of the subject of cryptozoology, because, as I mentioned earlier, in the 1970s, you couldn't turn on the TV or open the magazine or go to the movies without seeing something about either Bigfoot or the Yeti or the Loch Ness Monster or UFOs or any paranormal phenomenon. If you may remember the whole thing about the Bermuda Triangle. So it widened the scope beyond mere folklore into very serious consideration, and people paid attention to it. They didn't laugh at it, and even today, most people are not laughing at the situations concerning cryptozoology and the paranormal.
Did anything shock or surprise you when you were putting the book together?
What surprised me is how Roger Patterson was able to bring his film, Bigfoot, America's Abominable Snowman, out to the public. I wasn't aware of that. And I've written about film history, and I've written about film distribution, and I've actually worked in the film distribution industry. And this was something I had no knowledge of whatsoever. It's one of the reasons I didn't know about this is because Roger's film has not been seen in many, many years. It was never released on home video because of the agreement with the BBC, and it's not playing in theaters anymore. Their prints of the movie do exist. I was under the impression the film might have been lost because this was something that had been in a brief release, relatively brief, and then disappeared from view. But the prints of the film do survive. There's the cryptozoology museum that Lauren Coleman runs in Maine, and he has a print of that. He had told me that if people wanted to see it for research purposes, he could screen it. He can't show it commercially because of the copyright situation with the BBC.
Phil, one of your books is called The Greatest Bad Movies of All Time. Tell us about that title.
Oh, that was that book was from a couple of years ago. That was about two books back. The book was about films that inspire wonder. You're left wondering how seemingly intelligent people could come together and spend money to create such bizarre productions. And these are the films that are just, you watch these films with your jaw on your chest, and you can't believe
believe they're that bad.
Yeah, but they're a lot of these films are so bad they're good. Some of them are so bad they're bad. But this just goes beyond run-of-the-mill mediocrity to just full-blown, what the hell is this type of stuff? This is like Hollywood's version of maybe of Patterson-Gimlin. You're watching these crazy films, and you can't imagine that somebody thought this was a good idea.
The worst movie I have ever seen, and thank God I didn't go to the cinema to see it, but it was on cable, was The Adventures of Baron Munchausen.
Oh, that was a Terry Gilliam's film?
Horrible movie. Horrible.
I'm not a fan of Terry Gilliam's movies outside of Monty Python, so I saw about 10 minutes of it on TV, and I turned it off. I can understand the horror.
I mean, there was one scene where the Baron, in his outfit, you know, wearing his little pirates-type hat and stuff like that, smiled, and they had a gleam of light hit one of his teeth, and they, you know, it had one of those ping effects.
Yeah.
And had this just bizarre smile on his face, but it was just a horrible movie, and I'll never forget it because I watched the entire thing. It was that bad. I had to watch the entire thing.
That's what the greatest bad films of all time is about. You just can't turn this stuff off. It's just so wrong that you have to sit through it just to remind yourself that this thing does exist and this is not a figment of your imagination.
Let's go to some of the phones here as they line up for you. We'll start by going to Kenny west of the Rockies in San Francisco. Hi, Kenny. Go ahead.
Hi, George. I've been listening to your show for a while now.
Thanks, Kenny.
And how I look at this film, everything looks good. The animal looks muscular, but the weakness that I see is from the backside around the buttocks area. An animal this defined, muscularly defined, you would think that area there, you should see muscle movement. It looks as if you could picture, you can try this, like if you get like a pillow, you put it behind you and you look in the mirror and you start walking,
kind of juggling.
The legs moving, but you don't see any movement in the backside where the buttocks are. An animal this huge and muscular, you would think there should be muscular movement back there.
You think there's a guy in a costume there, Kenny?
Well, around the buttocks here, it's like it's padded cushion, and there's no muscle definition. Even if it was a lot of fur, there should be movement back there.
Interesting. Has anybody else brought that up, Phil?
Not that I'm aware of. Most people don't go looking at Bigfoot's booty. So there have been complaints about the feet, the soles of the feet. There have been complaints that the hands look like gloves. And then there are people who say that this whole thing looks like a genuine animal and it doesn't look like a piecemeal costume. So everybody, in many ways, it's a Rorschach test. Everybody looks at it and sees something different.
Interesting observation, Kenny. Thanks for the call. Next up, let's go to British Columbia on the wild card line. Terry's with us. Hi, Terry.
Hi, guys. How's it going?
All right.
Listen, I got a very scary story about the hag. This was so real, it scares me right now as I'm speaking to you.
Well, let's wait for the, because we're going to restrict this to Phil's movie, okay? And his stuff. So, but you're the hag story, open lines, that's perfect. Bobo, take care of that for Terry. Call him back at the open line time, and we'll go straight for you. These calls, folks, restricted to movies or Phil Hall's book, The Weirdest Movie Ever Made, as we talk about the Patterson-Gimlin Bigfoot film. Well, let's go next to Randy in Johnson City, Tennessee. Hey, Randy, go for it.
Hi, the weirdest movie, there's two of them. I'll make it quick. The first one that I ever seen was the weirdest movie to me was Salem's Lot in 1979.
That was a strange one. I remember that.
Yeah. The second movie that was weird, well, they never showed it on film, but this movie was made back in the late 1980s, early 1990s, somewhere in there. It was called Three Men and a Baby.
And which ended up being, it turned into a TV show, right? Or something like that, Two Men and a Baby?
They wasn't sure, I think.
Yeah, I know what film he's speaking about. That's the one with Tom Selleck and Steve Guttenberg?
That's it. That's it. I remember that. Mm-hmm. Was it that bad?
There was a sequel to the film, so it was a popular movie. I have to admit, I didn't see either film when it came out.
We've got Mary in the state of Washington now. Welcome to the program. Hi, Mary. Go ahead.
Hi.
Hey, how are you?
Hi. I've seen the movie.
Which one?
The
Patterson-Gimlin?
The Patterson.
What did you think of it?
Well, I grew up in Yakima. I never knew Roger, but I knew his wife. I went to school with his wife, and her sister was one of my best friends. And I also knew Bob Hieronymus, and went to school with him and church with his family.
Well, what'd you think of the film?
The film?
Mm-hmm.
I thought it looked like it walked like a human.
Did you think there was somebody in a costume?
I didn't at the time. When I saw it, I thought it looks like a human. It walks like a human, and the way the arms swung around and the face, and then it just turned back around and just kept on walking. It wasn't afraid or anything, and so I just thought it looked like a human to me. And then I started hearing the story, so everybody was all excited about it, and We started hearing the stories that Bob Hieronymus was telling, so I didn't think much more about it after that.
Do you get that kind of comments, Phil, about the film, that it looks like a human?
Well, not only me. I mean, a lot of people complained about it, and that's why there were some problems with Roger and Bob getting the film out in the first place, because when they started screening it at the University of British Columbia and the American Museum of Natural History and the Bronx Zoo, the scientists there said, it's a man in a suit. So this has been a complaint that's been going on ever since the film was first screened.
All right, next up, Joe in the Bronx. Welcome to the program. Hey, Joseph, go ahead.
Hey, George, how are you?
Wonderful.
Good. Yeah, I wanted to ask your guest. Now, it seems a little odd to me that this is the only film that claims to be actual footage of Bigfoot, being that there are so many other sightings. You would think that there would be either photos, now that we're in the age of camera phones, and or some other film that would have captured Bigfoot. What's your theory on this? Why is this the only one?
Well, according to Roger Patterson, he was under the belief that the Sasquatch that was in the film was either an elderly creature or was blind or near blind, because Sasquatches, through the folklore from the Native Americans, were nocturnal. And this Sasquatch was standing at a sandbar in the middle of the afternoon. So one reason why there had not been other films like this is because Sasquatches mostly come out at night. Now, of course, with today's technology, everybody has a video camera on their phones. You would imagine that they'd be able to have many more videos of this. But the Sasquatch isn't the camera hog. Bigfoot's not into selfies. They don't want to be seen, and they don't really interact with people, which is one reason why there have not been so many more films or videos of this. And I would assume, as a creature living in the woods, if this creature does exist, could probably hear a man coming from 500 yards away and would be able to hide itself or to run away.
So at this point now, Phil, after doing the book, looking at the film, what are your specific views about Bigfoot?
The book does not have my opinion of the film, because nobody's buying a book about what I think about Bigfoot, and that wasn't the purpose of the book anyway.
Right. It's about the film.
I leave the subject, now that the book is finished, pretty much where I started is I don't know what I'm looking at. And it's a very compelling film. I mean, it doesn't look like a man in a suit to me, which is why I'm not saying this is just a fake. But there are just a lot of holes in the story about how the film was made, how it got processed. Roger Patterson's behavior really raised a lot of red flags prior to the shooting of the film and afterwards, that I can't help but be skeptical of it. In many ways, I think, I know it's a cop-out of an answer, but I honestly don't know. And I sort of like it that way, because if I were just to go around saying, oh yeah, Bigfoot exists or Bigfoot doesn't exist, then the mystery is gone. I've already made my mind up, and the fact that I have not made my mind up enables me to continue to enjoy the mystery.
Would you call yourself a skeptic?
That's probably a good enough word to describe it. I'm not a cynic about it. I mean, people claim that they've seen Sasquatches, and as I said earlier, I certainly respect what they're saying, because I wasn't with them at the time. I have no idea what they saw or what they heard. But there's also very little evidence pointing to the fact that there are Sasquatches out there. There's no carcass has been found, no fur, no DNA has come forward. And as the fellow from the Bronx just said, this seems to be the only film. I mean, there are a lot of fake films and videos out there that have been debunked immediately. The Patterson-Gimlin film has never really been truly 100% debunked. There are still many, many people who believe it's genuine.
John in Virginia Beach, Virginia is with us now. John, thanks for calling, sir. Go ahead.
Thank you, fellas, for taking my call. Phil, I have a question for you, and you may not be able to answer it, and George might. But, you know, the people that say that Bigfoot doesn't exist for a simple reason, there's never been a carcass found of him, never been any bones found. Now, what do you think about that? Either one of you fellas can answer.
All right, you can go first, Phil. I've got my answer on that one.
Well, one of the arguments in favor of Bigfoot's existence is the fact you don't really find a lot of carcasses and skeletons of dead animals in the woods. I mean,
no, you don't find dead bears, you don't find dead deer, because they've been taken away and eaten.
That's right. There have been obviously fossils that are found, are excavated. If we're talking about extinct animals, dinosaurs, mammals around the Ice Age period, that you would find, but you have to really dig deep into the ground. If Bigfoot is going to die under a tree out in the woods, there's a good chance within a few days all the scavengers of the forest will have a meal of it.
We've got Tom in the Bronx. Welcome to the program, Tom. Good to have you with us.
I'd like to say that I'd seen a movie years ago about a scientist that believed that there was a particular type of dinosaur-like creature going around. And he, to enforce his logic, he actually had the costume made and wore it. And the next scene is, before you realize that he was a fraud, he was driving an automobile with a convertible automobile with a costume on, and you saw a dinosaur driving a convertible automobile in that film.
Was it a comedy?
No, it wasn't. It was supposed to be serious. He just believed that there was a creature of this variety.
And what was the name of it? Do you remember?
I don't recall the...
I don't know if you remember that one, Phil, huh?
That one doesn't ring a bell, no. And that, I probably would remember something about a man in a dinosaur costume driving a convertible. I'm sorry, I can't help on that.
One of my favorites, black and white movie, The Lost Continent. Remember that one?
Oh, yeah, from a long time ago.
Those, love
those
that.
Were fun, yeah.
Those were great. I mean, they were just captured your attention, to be sure. And, of course, as we get close to Christmas time, The Wonderful Life with Jimmy Stewart is a classic. Classic indeed. Tell us a little bit about your podcasting and what you're doing.
Well, I have a podcast on the SoundCloud platform. It's called The Online Movie Show with Phil Hall, and it's a half-hour weekly show, and I bring on people who are either filmmakers or film writers. I've had actors on the program, and we discuss all things movie. Sometimes we speak about classic films. Sometimes we speak about trends in filmmaking. We have independent filmmakers come on who are currently making new films, and we talk about what they're up to. This has been on SoundCloud for a little over 2 years. Actually, I'm in my third season now, so it's been a lot of fun. I've done about 80 episodes so far, and next Saturday I'm going out to record another 10 episodes to do that. And you can find it on SoundCloud. It's soundcloud.com/onlinemovieshow, or you can just go to Google and type in Online Movie Show with Phil Hall. And the beautiful thing about podcasting is the episodes are archived online. So if you don't get to hear the episode when it first goes live, you can just go to the site at any time and listen to it either in real time or download it and enjoy it at your leisure.
Now, since you've been doing this, what was the impetus to get you involved in studying what you do?
Simply because I like movies.
And I like that. That's
everybody
fair.
Likes movies, but I realized, well, you know, there's money in movies. And I was been writing about films since I was in college. I was actually a film critic for my college newspaper back at Pace University, which is going back to the early 80s. And I've had the good fortune to make a career writing about films. I've also worked as a film publicist, a film distributor, a film festival organizer, and I've also acted in about 20 movies as well.
Good for you. You love it. We're going to come back and take final phone calls with you in a moment, Phil, on Coast to Coast AM. Well, as Peter Davenport was saying while he was on during our UFO news segment, I'm going to be with him Saturday, March 23rd, with a number of other guests at our live event in Everett, Washington. I'm really looking forward to it. Saturday, March 23rd. How do you get your tickets? Go to coasttocoastam.com. At the top, look at events at the top of the homepage and click that. Or go in the carousel reel and click that, too. You'll see the revolving link to the historic Everett Theater. If you don't have a computer, that's okay. There's a phone number to call, 425 425- 425-258-6766. That's 425-258-6766. Even though it's March 23rd, it's coming up pretty darn fast, so don't get left out. Pick up your tickets. And welcome back to our final segment here. Phil Hall, we've got open lines next hour. Phil, of course, wrote the book, The Weirdest Movie Ever Made, about the Patterson-Gimlin Bigfoot film that we've been talking about. And, of course, we'll get your final phone calls this segment as well. Phil, when you think back now to that October moment in 1967 when this was happening, wouldn't you have loved to have been there?
Wow, I never was asked that question. Yes, I would. I would have loved to have been there. I have no idea how I would have reacted because neither Patterson nor Gimlin really expected to see it. The goal was, of course, to film the elusive Sasquatch, but I can't imagine they honestly thought that there was going to be one showing up right on time in perfect daylight they were able to get. I really wish I could have been there. It must have been an extraordinary experience. Bob Gimlin is still alive, and he does appearances around the country at Bigfoot-related conferences, and he's treated like a rock star by people who believe in Bigfoot.
Has he ever taken, do you know, a polygraph test?
Not that I'm aware of, and even if he did, it really wouldn't matter because those things aren't admissible in a court of law. And there are ways to get around that. That's something that a certain Dr. Ford.
But they sure would. It sure would give you credence, though, wouldn't it?
Not necessarily. I mean, why would he want to? Why would he want to take a polygraph test? Either you believe.
Well, if he passed it, it would give him, I think, the initial strength to really start pushing this, saying, "Folks, see, I've been telling you the truth. I just passed this FBI lie detector test," or whoever administers it. I think it would give him more ammo.
Well, he's never wavered from his story, and I think he's confident in what he saw. So even if he had took the polygraph test, he would still be telling the same story over and over.
Would you take it if you were him?
No.
Because, you would not. Yeah,
because if I'm confident enough in myself, I don't have to prove myself to anybody. I'd be telling people what I saw in the woods. If you believe me, that's wonderful. If you don't believe me, that's your burden, not mine.
Interesting. Okay, let's go back to the calls. Chris is in Winona, Mississippi. Hey, Chris, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Thank you, George. Phil, sure thing. I appreciate your angle on this 59 seconds of 16-millimeter film. I remember as a young child, went to a small theater in my hometown, and that was in 1970. And I can't tell you today what movie I went to see, but I can still vividly remember that trailer they played at the front of that movie, and it was that Patterson-Gimlin film. So you're right. It had a magical effect or something, the way it was shaking. And
oh, was
another
sure.
Creature, you know, that we had dominated everything, elephants, tigers in Africa, and, you know, man, as a kid, I thought, wow, there's something that we don't control that's still free and wild and up in the Northwest United States, you know, and I just thought that was just great. And I appreciate you making, you know, writing this book about it. And about the guy who called earlier about the pillow and the rear end, well, Bill Munns has done a lot of research on the, like you said, the breast and the fluid movements of the breast. And so there's been a lot of research on the authenticity of the film. But, I was going to tell y'all something kind of funny. In my persuasive speech in college, I didn't know what to do, and I thought, well, I know what. I'll try to persuade people that Bigfoot's real. So I, you know, I talked to my teacher, and she kind of looked at me funny, but I told him, I said, you know, today using 16-millimeter film evidence, eyewitness testimony, and Native American folklore, I intend to convince you that the legendary Sasquatch really exist. And I think I had a captive audience for a while because, you know, that film is really, to me, is I think it was a once in a lifetime thing, and it's an American treasure.
Sure.
And I appreciate you writing this book about it because it, you know, gives us more historical. I've always wanted to know more about the guys. I've done a lot of research that they had to get the film and they had to send it off, had to get out of the woods with it. And George asked you earlier, would you have wanted to have been there? But I've had thoughts. I don't know if I'd want to have been there because I think it took them like 2 weeks to get in there on horseback and to be out that far and to see something like that. it's almost like, whoa, you know, they had to spend the night there a few more nights to get out of there with that theme. And they knew
that
it was there.
Scare you.
And, you know, I think one of the guys that filmed it said if he could do it all over again, he would have took the shot because nobody believed him. And I always thought to myself, well, if you shot that Patty or the, you know, the female Bigfoot, they probably would have turned around and the big one,
yeah,
you know, standing behind him. And then somebody told me, well, you shoot him too. And I said, there was two people there. And I said, well, it could have been a whole, like a, I don't know what you call it, a family of them or something. But it would have been, those guys were pretty brave to be out there, I mean, by themselves like that. And
well, you bring up something interesting, Chris. And, Phil, you know, we've taken some calls from people who say that if they encountered a Bigfoot, not attacking them, but just if they encountered a Bigfoot, they would shoot it. And I'm kind of opposed to that, Phil. What do you think?
Well, I'm opposed to it, too. I mean, why kill an animal that's not doing you any harm? One thing I should point out is that there have been sightings of Sasquatches in every state except Hawaii. So while the film was shot in California and the legends of the Sasquatch were predominant in the Northwest, apparently there are still people out there today who are seeing Bigfoot from as far away as Alaska to Maine to Florida, so and all points in between.
And they probably have migrated. They can't get to Hawaii, obviously. Maybe that's why.
Well, I guess so. I mean, no, there's no record of a Sasquatch stowing away on a
boat or anything
out there. No.
I had a call, and I've said this a couple times to some Bigfoot hunters who've been on the show, but a guy called us one night, Phil, and he was out fishing in a very woodsy area, and he caught two fish, and he's holding them, and he spots a Bigfoot that's right next to him, just pops up. And he goes, oh, my God. And he said the Bigfoot looked at the fish, and so he immediately gave the two fish to the Bigfoot, which took the fish. And then Bigfoot looked at him, looked at the fish, and gave him one back.
Oh, that's sweet.
What do you think of that? Possible?
I have
it's a great story.
It's a sweet story. There's no reason to think that the Bigfoot would have thrown the fish aside and take the guy for lunch. I think that if there was a film that maybe is a little closer to what the Bigfoot could be, it would be Harry and the Hendersons. I mean, it's not a violent creature. It's a lovable, maybe a bit of a goofy creature.
Goofy, yeah.
Yeah, but it's not. It's certainly not the creatures that have been running around attacking starlets for too many years.
Our first-time caller, Michael in Houston, Texas, with us now. Good morning, Michael. Go ahead.
Good morning. Yeah, I just wanted to get your take on a story that I saw on TV the other day. I guess it was Destination Truth.
Mm-hmm.
That they mentioned that Bigfoot might be burying their dead.
And hence we can't find their bodies.
Right.
They may have that kind of intelligence, Phil. What do you think?
It would be very clever of them if that's true. there's no species that I'm aware of that would bury its dead. We have to point out as well that the film we're talking about was made 51 years ago, so there's a better than average chance that the Bigfoot that was encountered by Patterson and Gimlin no longer exists.
Right.
So if there are Sasquatches out there, and if they are being seen from everywhere from Alaska to Florida, there's going to have to be a breeding population of them. So one of the charges that the skeptics raise is that we have this large breeding population just hiding in plain sight from everybody. So that makes it a bit peculiar. If the Sasquatch does exist, I would imagine it's an endangered species or severely endangered by this.
Yeah, it's not a big community of Bigfoot, that's for sure. Let's go to Austin in New Haven, Connecticut on our Skype line. Austin, go ahead. Hello, Austin. Nope, he's not there. Let's try Shane in Redding, California. Shane, go for it.
Yes, hi, George. How are you doing tonight?
Great, thank you.
I'm calling in for
I actually have two, if that's cool, but I was calling in for the worst movie ever made, all time.
Sure, sure thing.
Okay, the first one is, have you ever heard of the band Jane's Addiction?
I've heard of Jane's Addiction, yes.
Okay, well, there is the singer of the band in 1991 put out a film called Gift, and it's just kind of one of those low-budget, kind of just really horrible movies. And but the main one I was thinking of, had on mine, is it's called Desperate Living, and it's by John Waters.
Oh, that's a very famous film, yes.
Yeah, famous. That movie is,
but it's
horrible.
Bad. You didn't like it, Shane.
I liked it. It's just, it's one of those movies that are like, okay, this is a really horrible, horribly made movie.
Did you see
and
the adventures?
It reminds me of today's day and age, in a way, with all the mental illness and disorders, and the queen, she wants to infect the whole kingdom with rabies.
Horrible. You got to watch The Adventures of Baron Munchausen, Shane. That's
you know,
a horrible movie, too.
I remember that when it came out, but I've never seen it.
Yeah, try to get it if you can, wherever it might be. It's one of those bad ones. Jerry's in Arkansas. Welcome to the program. Hi, Jerry.
Hey, how we doing?
All right.
Trying to get my computer to shut up.
Yeah, that's okay.
I'm kind of on the fence about this, but my brother and I saw one of these things back about, I'm going to say mid-60s in East Central Arkansas. They were doing some work over close to the interstate, clearing some woods and stuff. And we went to spend a week with my grandmother in the summer because I was about 7, he was about 10. And, of course, she had no air conditioning, so we slept on a pallet in the living room floor. She had a bunch of cats. Well, they got on the bed. Well, late at night, the cat come across and going toward the front door. The door was open, screen porch. So we're chasing the cat. The cat gets to the door, and he stops and looks up and goes, meow, and goes back the other way. And by then, we stand up, and this thing walks right by the porch, walks across the yard, you know, lit up by the moon, and goes into the corn patch and on into a thicket. And if it had turned right, it could have went 20 feet and hit the gravel road. But it went through the briars and over, there's a rice canal on the other side of the briar thicket that they used to save water to put in the rice fields because they didn't have pumps back then, the wells and stuff. And we went back after we got grown. We never told anybody because we're kids and we're going to get a whipping for land. We didn't know what it was, this big old, tall, long, huge thing walking upright, long, swinging arms, you know. And it was about 74, 75. We saw that Patterson film on TV, and we both jumped up at the same time and said, that's it, that's what we saw. And then we had to tell the story, you know. But, and then again, I said I'm on the fence because I'm a deer hunter. I've got trail cameras. There's millions of trail cameras in America and everywhere in the world. Somebody should have got a picture of one. And I saw the thing. We were within 20 feet of it. We went back to that house, and it had been abandoned, you know, 30 years later. And I tiptoed, and I could touch the eave of the porch just barely. And his head was about an inch under the eave of the porch as he walked by. So he would have been a good 7 foot tall, 7 and a half. And we've seen the thing, and it's hard for us to believe. And, you know, we've told the story. We've got laughed at. I don't care. I don't care what anybody thinks. I'd take a polygraph, but I don't care. I don't need anybody's opinion. I saw the thing.
You know what you saw.
Of it.
Yeah. You know what you... Did it scare you?
Well, not really, because we had no clue what it was, you know. It didn't see us because it was dark, and we're standing in the doorway of the house, and the porch is about 8 foot wide and 12 foot long. It just walked right by the porch right in front of us. And it never looked our way, and we just stood there like, we thought, well, that's got to be a guy. No, he's too big. Why is he going into the corn patch? Why don't he go out to the road? He just goes right through the corn patch and on into a really rough thicket that a rabbit could barely get through. And, you know, we just stood there like, what in the world was that? It was so huge. And
Would you love to see it again?
I would love to see it again. I've seen things in the woods, nothing like that, but I've seen things in the woods that I've sat there and scratched my head, but nothing like that, but I'd love to see one.
You know, Phil, everybody's got a smartphone now. How come we can't get a solid picture?
Well, as I mentioned earlier, the Sasquatches aren't Kardashians. They don't like to be on camera. They don't want to interact with people. As this gentleman from Arkansas just said, the creature walked by without even looking into the house. So if the Sasquatches are out there, the very last thing they want to do is interact with humans. And if it is a creature living in the woods, it probably has rather acute senses and would be able to hear anybody coming from a long distance away.
Let's grab a quick call with Robert in Altoona, Pennsylvania. Robert, we've got a minute for you, sir. Go for it.
Okay, I'll make it quick. This is a big honor for me, George. First time I ever got to talk to you.
Thank you.
One quick comment about the Patterson film. I know this is weird, but the caller that said about Bigfoot's butt not moving much, I noticed that too, and I think there's a reason for it. I thought this years ago. The female, they think, I think it looks like it just gave birth.
Well, you know what? I was going to bring that up to you, Phil. What are the possibilities of this female type of specimen that's on the film that and Robert's correct that it just had given birth of a baby? But I would assume that given the complexity of the Sasquatch, it might be holding. It should have held the baby. What do you think?
Well, if it had given birth to the baby, it would be a bit strange why the Sasquatch would be out in the middle of a sandbar
without
the baby. Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't imagine that they have Sasquatch daycare centers. So.
Oh, no, but I'd love to set one up. That would be a great story all by itself. Hey, Phil, we're out of time, but I want to be able to use you as a resource for movies every once in a while. Would you do that for us?
You know where to find me, George.
All right, my friend. Thank you. Have yourself a good next weekend. We are going to have open lines next on Coast to Coast AM.